And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host, Matt Watson. Today, we're talking to Alan Stein, who is the founder and CEO of Kadima Careers. Today, we're going to be talking about how his company helps people with career acceleration, helping professionals try and find better jobs and helping them do that. We're also going to talk about his experience working as a VC. We're going to talk about his side hustle and building this business and lessons learned from starting a side hustle and going through that process. We're talking about a lot of interesting things today. Before we get started, I do want to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale. You can check us out at fullscale.io. As you guys know, we help people build software development teams. We have over 300 employees in the Philippines, front end, back end, mobile, QA, whatever you need help with, we can help you. Check us out at fullscale.io. Alan, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Appreciate you having me here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, I'm looking at your LinkedIn page here and it says you're ex-Google, ex-Meta, ex-American Express, ex-Salesforce. Did you cancel your accounts with all these things? Like, you don't use Google anymore? You're not on Facebook anymore? Like, what does that mean?
I use Google. I don't use much Meta. I don't use Salesforce. We use HubSpot, actually, as our CRM. But I did work at all those places. So I also worked at Tableau. I worked at UBS. I've had 21 jobs at 29 companies working for 38 bosses.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That honestly sounds terrible. Like, that's a lot of places to work at.
Some of it was terrible, but actually I rate all of the jobs I've had, and I've had 29 of them, and all my bosses. My jobs have an average GPA of about a 3.55. The bosses, on the other hand, have a GPA of about a 2.6.
Okay. So a lot of those are common Silicon Valley companies. Did you live in California for a while, or you have always lived in New York?
I'm a lifetime New Yorker. For the last 15 years, though, before starting Kadima, I've reported to people on the West Coast.
Okay.
I've been a New Yorker for all my life.
Well, it sounds like your experience through all those kinds of companies must give you an incredible amount of experience and viewpoint for a lot of different things. I'm sure we'll learn a lot from you today. And then, you know, you also worked at a VC firm for a couple of years. So I'm sure there's a ton we can learn from you. And I think all of your experience working at those big companies must have a lot to do with why you started Kadima, trying to help people probably get jobs at a lot of those kinds of companies, right?
Yeah, totally. So I've been on both sides of the interview table. I've interviewed probably 2,000 people in my career, not as a recruiter, not as a headhunter, but as a hiring manager. And I've also probably been interviewed between 1,000 and 2,000 times across my career, because to get those 29 jobs, I had to fail on trying to get a lot more jobs.
So what led you to the idea of starting Kadima? You're like, you know what, I just want to help other people, or I love helping people get better jobs and improving the career. Like, what led you to start it?
Yeah, partially I was getting tired of getting fired. So out of those 29 jobs, five of them I got fired from. I was not fired from Salesforce by the time I started Kadima Careers, but something that I was really intrigued with throughout my entire career is growing and developing talent. And I would always raise my hand at every company I worked at to be on the recruiting team, not to be a recruiter, but to go onto campus, to be active in recruiting, to be part of the interview panels. It's something that, I don't know, for whatever reason, it's an area of interest of mine. And I'm a people person. I like growing and developing careers. And I think identifying and selecting good talent is fun. And also, I don't know, I also happen to be pretty good at it.
You know, I share the same sentiment. You know, at Full Scale, one of my favorite things is talking to our employees. We, you know, hiring a lot of younger people, a lot of people out of college, and just, you know, helping create amazing jobs for them. It's like one of my favorite things is seeing their happiness, helping them with their career. And then we're working every day to help them with their career growth and training and mentoring, all these things. And it just feels awesome. It feels awesome to help people advance in their career and have a better job. And then seeing how that helps their family and all different things. Like, it just feels good. Like, it's a great type of business to be in.
Yeah. We probably do it for selfish reasons. It helps inflate our happiness and to see other people succeed. And when I work with clients, or I've had friends or former employees, and you see them grow and develop their careers, it kind of makes you like proud or happy for them. So, yeah.
So most people, you know, everybody listening probably are familiar with recruiters and staffing companies. You know, you go hire one of them and they help you find a software developer or executive, you know, at a company. Where you're on the opposite side. You're sitting on the side of the professional, right? Of the individual trying to help improve their ability to go get these kinds of jobs, right?
Yeah. I've been tempted to go into executive search, aka headhunting, before. Yeah. I've looked internally. I've made it to final rounds, not getting the role in recruiting roles at Google and Salesforce and Facebook. None of those roles really sat well with me, because they're all working for the company. They're all working for, yeah. And I fundamentally care about the individual. So I'm on the candidate side. We work for the candidate at Kadima Careers. We actually have developed all our incentive structures for our team and our metrics to focus on the best outcome for our clients. And that is getting jobs quickly, confidently, and with lots more money.
So what are the types of individuals you're working with for these kinds of roles? Are they just generic, like, you know, marketing, sales, operations, development, just kind of leadership positions? Like, who is your target customer for this?
So because my career has spanned seven different careers, I've pivoted my career seven different times. I've worked in venture capital, I've worked in banking, I've worked in baseball, I've worked in marketing, I've worked in big tech. I've realized that the job search and job acquisition is essentially the same. There's a couple of tweaks in different industries, like management consulting. If you're getting a job at McKinsey, BCG, or Bain, there's some different idiosyncrasies there. But getting a job is essentially the same. So we work with clients across the board, across functions, across industries, generally people with 5 to 25 years of experience. But areas like you said, marketing, finance, sales, customer success, operations, dev, engineering, product management, it's really all the same stuff.
Okay. So I'm curious, what do they end up paying for that? Or somehow you get like a cut of them getting hired by the employer? Like, how do you make money from this?
We started with an income share agreement where we basically took a percent of their first year comp, and it didn't sit well with me. And actually, like some of our very early clients, I wound up getting paid a lot of money very quickly for very little work. So we actually have changed our model to a pay upfront or a monthly membership fee, and people pay us between $2,500 and $10,000, depending on the level of service they want. And we work with them until they get a better job, and then we help them negotiate their offer, and then we help them in their first 90 days at that company.
Well, I'm going to guess there must be a big ROI from that, right? Like, what is the kind of average ROI that these people see?
The average ROI is between 11 and 14 times.
Wow.
That we see with our clients. So we'll probably be raising our prices at some point, but we do want to create something that is affordable for everybody. Even though $10,000 is not affordable for everybody, we are building products and services that are more scalable and more affordable for people all over the world, because we do serve 6 out of the 7 continents. We're still looking for our first Antarctica client.
You know, what's fascinating, though, is you can go get a job at a place, and like, say, if I want to be a CTO somewhere, there might be one place that would pay $180,000 a year, and there might be some other place that pays $300,000 a year, and another one that pays $500,000 a year, right? Like, it can be all over the board, and to some degree, it's up to the candidate, to the type of company they want to work at. Like, I don't want to work at this big company. Maybe they would pay me $500, but there's like no way I want to work there. It's like all the companies you mentioned, like I personally would never want to work at any of those places. I'm not a big company guy. I would jump out the window. But when you're working with your clients, it must be tough, right? Because you're potentially helping them with all those kinds of opportunities and trying to help them navigate like making some of those decisions.
Yeah. First thing we do with our clients is we sit down and understand what's important to them. So sometimes people care about compensation as their key driver, sometimes work-life balance, sometimes working with smart people, sometimes working remotely. Different people have, maybe people have young children and they need that flexibility there. So different people have different desires. Then we work with them to identify a subset of at least 40 companies that they should target in their search. And then we help them figure out how to get interviews, offers, and money at those target companies. They may land at a company not on their target list, but by narrowing in on a finite set of companies and organizations to focus their search on, makes it immensely more successful and also helps to lasso in the confusion and ambiguity of the job search.
So tell me more about creating this as a side hustle. So you said you were working at Salesforce when you started this. How did you go about originally doing this as a side hustle? Did you have any, partners or co-founders or anything? It was just all you. Like, what was the process of kicking this off?
Yeah. So I started off as just a coaching business while I was at Salesforce. So I filled out an OBA. If you work for a large company and you run an outside business, you usually have to fill out what's called an outside business agreement, where you need to declare what you're doing. Most companies will allow you to do this, especially if it's in a non-competitive market. If I was developing a CRM software platform, Salesforce probably would not have approved that, but I was just doing a career coaching business. So they allowed me to do that. And then I just started marketing my services to friends and family, to my relatively small LinkedIn network at that time. Now it's become slightly bigger. And I started to get some early customers, and I'd be very flexible on the pricing and really take anything I could get just to kind of get some beta testers, beta clients in our service that we're developing. And the service is ultimately going to be built into a product, but for lots of reasons, we decided to build the service before the product.
So how did you balance the work commitments though, like the work balance of that? Did you have to do all this stuff kind of in the evenings, or you were taking calls during the day? Like how did you balance that?
Truth of the matter is I get very efficient at jobs. That's one of the reasons why I have jumped around jobs so quickly. After 6 or 12 months in a job, I kind of know what I'm doing. And if I don't push myself, it's not that hard to do. And I was a people manager. I had built a strong team at Salesforce, so I had a good team in place. So what I was basically operating two laptops side by side, attached to monitors. I'd be very responsive to my Salesforce activities, and I would go to all those meetings. I would always prioritize that. But during downtime, I'd focus on Kadima, and I would have my two laptops at the ready. If I got a Slack, if I got an email, if I had a need from my boss or my colleagues, I would jump on it. And outside of that, I was focusing a lot of my effort and mind space on building Kadima.
So you mentioned potentially building a product. So you also had an idea of building like some kind of product, would be like sort of like a coaching training kind of thing, or helping them find what jobs are out there available. Like what were you thinking about from a product perspective?
Yeah. So the approach we take, I'm a very operationally driven person. When I worked at Google and Facebook and Salesforce, I was always building scalable operations. So we've essentially broken down the job acquisition process into operational steps. So we have a system that gets people more interviews, offers, and money quickly. And there's things that you can do in terms of identifying your 40 target companies, figuring out who you know at those companies, reaching out to people at those companies in the right way, having informational interviews, applying to those roles. That can be automated and can be done algorithmically. Right now, we're teaching people how to do this through a series of online courses, spreadsheets, step-by-step instructions. But once you can have step-by-step instructions or SOPs, standard operating procedures, The next step is you can start to build that into a product.
So is this business currently primarily you, or do you have other employees that are helping you now?
So we have 21 people on the team.
Oh, wow.
Which includes 7 FTEs and 13 coaches and a salesperson plus myself.
Wow. Okay. So this has really grown. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been three plus years, and it's been ups and downs and all between. And I actually shut it down for a few months at one point when I was dealing with tough times from an anxiety and depression perspective. But things have been moving forward nicely, and January was one of our strongest months ever.
So how long did you continue to work at Salesforce before you started doing this full time?
About 15 months. So okay. I started it in July 2020, and then I left Salesforce on September 21st, 2021, the first day of fall. So I like to call it the fall of Al.
Okay. So at that point, were you still the only employee, or did you have other employees already?
At that point, I was the only person. Okay. I don't know. I might have brought on a VA, a virtual assistant. Okay. At some point, I forget when I did that. I don't know if I was at Salesforce. I think I did that while I was at Salesforce. I definitely did, because I had a hard time meshing my two calendars, because I wasn't allowed to have my Salesforce calendar talk to my Kadima calendar.
Yeah, so yeah. That makes it really hard.
I would take a screenshot of my calendar every week, and I would send it to my VA, and then she would add those meetings in, not the specific meetings at Salesforce, but just like those blocks of time, because my primary responsibility was Salesforce, because they were paying me north of $500,000. So I had to prioritize that.
Yeah, I had that same problem, but I just used Calendly. It's like I was able to connect Calendly to both of them, and then I just give people Calendly. Like, you want to book time, Calendly.
Salesforce wouldn't allow that because of there was very tight security for big tech companies like that, where I wasn't able to mingle that information, or at least not in a way that I was able to figure out. So I just took screenshots and sent it over to my VA.
So did you work at Salesforce until basically you had the revenue to replace your previous income, or did you just, how did you think about making that transition?
I was hoping to get to that point, but because I happened to report that. Anyway, I was hoping to get to that point, but because Salesforce wanted to get rid of me, not because of Kadima-related things, we wound up negotiating an exit package for myself sooner than I would have liked to.
Okay.
But it was I would have probably just been there 6 more months if we didn't negotiate that exit package.
So, you know, this started out as a side hustle for over a year, and eventually you transitioned this full time. When you transitioned it full time, did it dramatically help you grow and scale it, like having much more time to wake up every morning and that was your only focus?
You would think. It gave me a hell of a lot more time. I don't know how efficient I was with that time. And yeah, so I think also the pressure began mounting, because while I was at Salesforce, I had nice income benefits. Yeah. Fortunately, my wife has a job, and she has a great job. She's a doctor at NYU, but it put added pressure on myself, and I made lots of mistakes.
Now you got to make it work. Got to make this work now.
Exactly. And I got tempted to go back into the corporate world. I actually was still interviewing for roles when I exited Salesforce. And in 2022, I wound up actually getting an offer at Amazon, which I was contemplating taking, going there, just basically getting paid and waiting till I got fired there while I continue to work on Kadima. But I decided not to do that because it would take 60 hours a week to work at Amazon.
Well, I feel like the best general advice for people in these situations is to keep your full-time job as long as you possibly can, right? Because I think more often than not, people leave their full-time job too soon. And then they're like, well, I thought it would only take 90 days, or I thought it would only take 6 months, and I had enough money to last me the 90 days. But then this stuff just takes way longer than you think it's ever going to take to build and scale.
It's like if you ever do construction on a house or anything, it's always twice as long and twice as expensive or something like that. It has taken me a hell of a lot longer to be where I am now. I've lost multiple bets with my kids when I kept saying, I'm going to hit $1 million in revenue by this date. And they're like, no effing way. And they were right. So I owe them. I've lost multiple $5 or $10 bets to my sons.
So I have a random question for you. You mentioned that you had a virtual assistant. Where's your virtual assistant from?
So she was from a company called Vava Virtual. And I eventually, they wound up switching out the VA. And then the second VA, I wound up hiring on. And now she works with us as a marketing associate.
But where is she from?
US. So this company was US based. I have worked with Filipino ones as well. A lot cheaper. Not necessarily any worse quality than the US one. Vava Virtual, I found out about through my wife, and I used them. They were very expensive. I like the owners of them, but I didn't like the pricing of the VAs.
Well, I mention it because a lot of people have virtual assistant from the Philippines, and they always have good experiences with it. And it's the same reason that we have software developers in the Philippines, for the same reason that people love their virtual assistants from the Philippines. They love the software developers in the Philippines. So that's why our business has really grown. We have over 300 employees. So if you're listening, you need software developers, check us out, fullskill.io.
Yeah, I haven't used software developers in the Philippines. I've definitely used lots of good talent in the Philippines. And also when I worked at Google and Facebook, we had outsourced vendors for the work we did. And we had people in Philippines and we had people in India and Singapore and all over the place. And Philippines it has a lot of great talent. Really, they speak great English, very friendly people. And also nice place to visit as well.
I've been there 14 times. I'll be back there in 6 weeks. So
I've only been there once or twice. But have you ever had Balut?
Balut? Yes, I've had Balut.
I didn't have it, but I went there with a with a team from Google, and I had some of my colleagues try it. But
fermented duck eggs. For those who don't know what it is
it's duck or chicken, or could it be either?
I know. I'm pretty sure it's duck.
Okay, whatever it was, my friend just told me that as she was eating it, she was crunching down and she felt like the beak of the fetal.
Yeah, it might be chicken. I don't remember. Yeah. But yeah, it's its own weird thing for sure. Well, so I love your story. It's a great story about building a startup or a side hustle. So how fast have you went from then just yourself to, I think you said 21 employees. You've had like 20 employees in the last 2 years.
So I've scaled that up. So I have 7 people that are full-time on staff, either paid as W-2 or contractors. Then I have 13 coaches, and the coaches get paid based on the client load that they handle. So those we can scale up and down. And there are so many great career coaches. Well, there's so many career coaches out there, and there's not so many great ones, but I've been fortunate enough to interact with great people at all these top companies. So I'm able to find the good ones, and we actually incentivize our coaches based on the results. So our coaches get 2/3 of their compensation only when they get their client a better job.
So what's great about that from your perspective is it also reduces the risk for you, right? Like, they're not your full-time employees. You can scale up, you can scale down. If you don't have clients, you're not stuck paying them, right? Like, so that's got to be like a really key part of your business that helps reduce some of your risk too, right? Is by working through these coaches that are part-time.
Yeah. So when we get a new client, I have a dashboard of my 13 coaches. I know what availability they have. I know what their strengths are. And we match the client up to an available coach that matches the strength and needs that individual needs. And frankly, there's so many coaches out there that I can add on. And there's a lot of coaches that like to take this side work, and we send them lots of volume of good people. And because our clients are paying decent money, it kind of is a self-selection mechanism of good customers. It's like with Costco, if you have to pay $60 for a membership, you wind up getting a certain quality of customer for people that are paying for service.
So most of these coaches that you're talking about, is their day job working as a hiring manager at some of these big firms? Like, what kind of people do you hire for this?
Some are full-time coaches, but most have jobs at Salesforce, at LinkedIn, at Amazon, at DoorDash, at DocuSign, at, I don't know if I said Salesforce. So most of these people are in the tech industry. We help people across all industries, but because tech hires at such velocity, we train people to get past the Google and Amazon interviews, which are some of the hardest in the world to pass. Yeah. And if they can, if people can get past Google and Amazon interviews, they can get into any company.
So I'm thinking in my head now, like if some of your coaches are hiring managers, like I wonder if they went to coach somebody and then they end up just hiring them for a position they had open.
Well, there have been some of our coaches that have posted roles to our Kadima community. And we have to make sure there's no conflict of interest. And when I referred people in, when I was at Salesforce, when I was running this business, I would have to declare that, hey, this guy Wesley is a client of mine. I don't want any, a referral bonus for putting them in. And I don't want to be associated with the decision-making process. So our coaches, to the extent that I know, are not doing anything shady.
So you figured out a great business. You got a great business model. Got it all figured out. It's growing and scaling, which is hard to figure out. But I feel like the even harder part of a business is figuring out how to scale the sales and marketing, the go-to-market strategy, right? So how do you find customers?
LinkedIn is my biggest resource. So I've been trying to figure out that platform for the last 3 years. I've worked with 3 or 4 coaches. I've read a lot, listened to a lot. Some of it is correct. Some of it's not. But LinkedIn is a big source. Also, because I've been fortunate enough to work at Google, Salesforce, American Express, Facebook, and go to Columbia Business School, I have that authority with those 5 different groups, which I could probably just fish in that pond for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And be totally fine. But So that's like, I do a lot of speaking events. So yesterday I spoke at Duke. I spoke at Columbia Business School last week. We've spoken at
MIT. It's a big added value to them, right? You're coaching, teaching them about how to get a job. Like it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Yeah. Like when I spent $138,000 on my MBA, the reason I spent that money is I wanted a good job, and we're getting people a good job for $10,000. I'm not saying it's the same thing as an MBA.
Right.
But a lot of reason that people go for an MBA is to get a better job. And the only reason that people come to Kadima is to get a better job.
Well, I think another key thing here to point out that a lot of entrepreneurs have to think about when they want to start their own business is thinking about, how do I monetize what I know, my network, the people I know, all those things, right? You're like, hey, I know all these people from the college you went to, all these companies. How do I just monetize the people I know? How do I figure out how to build a business and monetize this, right? And that's really the most valuable thing that a lot of us have. You know, when we started Full Scale 6 years ago, we hired 100 people in the first 12 months at Full Scale because of people I knew were like, hey, Matt, if this works for you, I'm interested. You know, if it works for you, how can I get involved? How can you help me? And it was all just people I knew. Right. And as an entrepreneur, that is the most valuable thing you have, is the network of people you have. And a lot of times people have a great business idea, but they don't have the network or the authority to support it. Right. Where for you and for me, when I started Full Scale, it's like we had the network and authority. It's like now we can use those things to really drive the business.
Yeah. And almost everybody has a network, whether it's your friends, family, or anything. But when you join LinkedIn or you join any platform like that, you always start with 0 connections. So I do fundamentally believe that, like, you and I might have started with a little bit of a boost to start, but you can also build relationships.
And you can build one.
Yeah. That's a big thing that we teach our clients. Some of our clients come to us from Stanford and MIT and things like that. But some people come to us from Binghamton. That's where I went to undergrad, or maybe no college at all. And there are ways to build relationships through commonalities of work, commonalities of location, commonalities of school, commonalities of volunteer organizations you're a part of. And there are ways to build relationships.
Okay. So I would love to talk to you more about LinkedIn, if that's okay. I use LinkedIn. I record a podcast. I have a blog. I post on LinkedIn every day. it's a huge part about how we grow full scale and how we grow leads and marketing. It works really, really well for us. Sounds like it works really, really well for you too. And you have figured out some formula, even if you've had four different coaches, you know, or these influencer people trying to help you. What can you share with us that has worked for you to grow your business?
So inbound works well. So every day I'm posting something on LinkedIn, trying to be engaging or entertaining or something of that. But sometimes I'll get 1,000 impressions. Earlier this week, I got 275,000 impressions for something that nice. I didn't even think that was that good. So yeah. I don't quite understand what people are going to like when I put stuff out, but I take lots of swings at the plate. And the general rule of thumb is post once a day. I see a lot of people like posting two times, three times a day. Like Gary Vee is posting all the time. And I just have to balance going crazy and being able to be a steady stream of stuff out there. But a lot of what I do is outbound. So the beauty of LinkedIn is there's a billion people on it. Everybody who's looking for a job is on LinkedIn. That's not true. Everybody that's looking for the sort of jobs that we help with are on LinkedIn. So professional jobs, jobs in the six-figure space, you have to be on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn information is really truthful. And there's lots of reasons why it has to be truthful. So I can find people that went to Kellogg School of Business that are now working at American Express. And I know that they're likely underpaid if they've been at American Express for 10 years. Because I worked at American Express, great company to work for, but they don't pay that well. So I can find those people, I can reach out to those people, and I can start having a conversation with those individuals. So it's a combination of inbound and outbound. I don't have Sales Navigator license. I have had that at times, but I don't even need to use that.
So is the So do you get more value from the outbound than you do just posting stuff?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. It would be nice to know that.
Yeah.
Every week I'm connecting with between 100 and 200 people, or I'm sending connection requests to 100 and 200. I'm not sure when LinkedIn is going to cap it each week because it's not a steady number because it's based on how many connection requests you send out and how many people accept it. It's not a very clear algorithm, but I'm sending out at least 100 connection requests a week. Two people that are ICPs, ideal customer profiles of my company. And after doing this for 3.5 years, I pretty much know who is a good customer or potential customer of mine. So I'm doing that. And I'm also weaning connections as well. And this I learned from Hala Taha, who's good on LinkedIn. And so I try to cull the dead weight and bring in new connections as well. And
you delete connections as well?
I do, because LinkedIn caps connections at 30,000.
Yeah.
And because one of the times when I was working on mastering LinkedIn, I used some automated tool. You're not supposed to. I used it incorrectly. And within a period of 6 weeks, I got 9,000 additional connections.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. But then I look back on it and it was a lot of crap. So now I have to go back and wean some of that crap because I'm at 28,000 connections and I don't want to hit that 30,000 cap.
Yeah. It looks like you have 40,000 followers. I'm right behind you at about 35,000, and about 15 months ago or so, I only had 15,000.
Yeah.
And I've really grown on LinkedIn and I really enjoy it. And some of those followers I get from like you mentioned, doing connection requests, and that works great. And then if you just post really good content, you get a lot of followers as well, right? Yeah. Like I had a post about a year ago that got 1 million views on LinkedIn, which is absolutely insane. And I will never do that again. But in a 2-day period, I got 3,000 new followers or something just from that one post.
I haven't cracked the follower math yet. The only one day I got 1,000 new followers, but that was I paid a paid influencer to post something that did really well. But a lot of the followers that I got from that were not my ICP. So
yeah,
the volume came, but I'd rather have quantity than quality.
It's all about quality.
the metric that I care most about are profile views. I look at how many people are looking at my profile every week.
Nice. So do you also do DMs or do you just do the connection request?
We do DMs too. We do DMs, although now I'm dealing with a bug where LinkedIn is not allowing me to message people that have open DMs. So I'm dealing with that. So that's a danger of relying on any platform. So LinkedIn is a key platform of ours. I don't know if you ever read the book Traction, where they talk about this 19.
Great book.
I don't want to be dependent on LinkedIn. So that's why I do the speaking events. We've done sponsorships. We've bought ads on Facebook, which got us a lot of volume, but a lot of shit, frankly. I think that's because I did poor targeting because I'm just learning the system. And we're doing affiliate deals now as well.
So tell us about using LinkedIn DMs, because generally I feel like everybody is really hesitant to use them because nobody likes getting a bunch of DMs and sold stuff. So do you have an approach with that that works very well, that feels less salesy and more helpful? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's similar to what we teach our clients. So we teach our clients how to build relationships, because relationships ultimately get you a job. About 40%+ of jobs come through referrals and recommendations. Similarly, how we teach our clients, you got to build some sort of commonality with them. So when I reached out to you, I think I reached out to you cold. I said, hey, I saw you mentioned in Jordan Cutler's newsletter, which you don't even know who the hell he is, actually. I found out.
No.
But I use that as an opening line to you.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Cutler, he's a good guy to follow on LinkedIn if you're in the engineering space. He has, like, I think, 30 or 40,000 followers and 50,000 people on his newsletter. He mentioned a whole bunch of different people that he follows and likes.
Okay.
He put your name on there.
Awesome. See?
Unbeknownst to you.
Yeah.
So I reached out to almost everybody on there. Like, I looked at, like, he probably listed 20, 25 people. I looked at their profile, and if the profile looked interesting, which probably 20 out of the 25 did, I'd shoot a note, say, hey, Matt, I saw you that Jordan Cutler just mentioned you in his newsletter. I'm a big fan of his. I figured I'd reach out to you here. And even though you don't know who Jordan Cutler is,
maybe
you're a LinkedIn whore like me, and I accept most connection requests that come to me. And you accepted that. And then we started going back and forth, and now we're on a podcast together. Not everybody's going to accept, though. So I assume when I send those 100 to 150 connection requests out per week, I might get 40.
About half, 40-50%.
Yeah. It's kind of hard, actually, with LinkedIn to figure that out easily without tracking everything on spreadsheets. So, yeah.
I used to use a tool that did it,
and it wound up being inaccurate. And then we just said, screw it. We know this is working. I don't know if it's 40%. I don't know if it's 48%, but it works.
So thought leadership and posting on LinkedIn, to some degree, just making noise works, right? Like, just making any kind of noise is better than making no noise a little bit. But the better you get at thought leadership, for sure, building a personal brand, creating some kind of influence, works really, really well on LinkedIn for your business. It works really well for my business. Have you tried thought leadership ads on LinkedIn?
I've considered them. I want to work with a trained professional who knows how to buy ads on LinkedIn rather than me mess around with it. So
It's not hard.
Okay. Well, I'm talking to a team that can do it. We are going to do that. We're still fixing our funnels. So that when I start paying for ads, I have paid for ads before, like I said, with Facebook and some other things. And then we had leaky funnels. So we wound up losing some of that volume. But yes, the thought leadership ads are the thing that I'm looking at
on
LinkedIn, where you can it's basically like Facebook, where you can just boost your post, essentially, like you're pay to play.
So LinkedIn didn't allow this until a year or so ago. You didn't used to be able to do this. You could only do ads that would come from, you know, Kadima or Fullscale or whatever. And people see an ad and they just scroll right by, right? Like we all hate ads and we don't want to read ads. But what's amazing about the thought leader ads is it just looks like it came from me or it came from you. And it'll say real small, you know, promoted by Fullscale or whatever. And people read them and they engage with them. I've had a lot of success with them, and I really recommend giving them a try. And you just go in and you just take your normal post on LinkedIn, but you go through the ad system and you basically can go back and select that specific post you did. And then whoever posted it, you have to get them to allow your permission to use it as a thought leader ad. And so you could actually do it with other employees that work for you. It doesn't even have to be only you. That has to be people that work at Kadima.
Yeah.
But it's really, really cool. And I definitely recommend checking it out. It's something fairly new over the last year. And for you, it could be like going in like, hey, people who worked at this call, you know, or went to this college or whatever, like how we figure out the right people. But yeah, I really recommend checking it out.
Yeah, totally going to do it. I went to HubSpot Inbound last year and LinkedIn was supposed to give me $1,000 credit to use these. They never wound up giving it to me. Like I got to follow up with that. Anyway.
Yeah.
It is on the docket. It's probably going to be a second quarter initiative as we're planning our OKRs.
So as we round out the show here, there's one more topic I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned you have international customers and you had customers in six continents, which that is absolutely incredible. One of my previous companies was called Stackify and we had customers in 60 countries. And it was so cool to me to talk to all of them and learn about their businesses and all the things they did was super fascinating. So how has this worked for you as an international business? You attract the same customers just randomly on LinkedIn? Like how are you finding international customers?
Yeah. So when I moved to American Express to Google, and ever since Google, I've always worked on global teams. And I realized that there's 8 billion people on this earth and not
yeah.
just 330 million Americans.
Yep.
And there's lots of great talent out there. And I've hired teams globally as well. It's not all that different globally. There's some different employment law and probation yeah. and different paperwork. But the act of getting a job is the same in Portugal as it is in Australia. So we help people get jobs all over the place. Sometimes the visa requirements are tough. We work with a lot of clients that might be in India and want to get a job in the States. And that
right.
is a little bit more difficult sometimes because you got to get sponsorship and we work with people with that and we have processes to work through that. But if you're in India and you want to get a job in India, we help you get a job at Google in India.
Okay.
Singapore, same thing, Australia. So it's the same process and we're helping.
Do you tweak your fees?
We do. So we have three different products. We have our coaching products. It costs me the same amount to pay my coaches. So
yeah.
that we don't tweak all that much, but our digital courses, we have parity pricing so that when we sell our product in Kenya, it's 20 cents on the dollar. In India, it's 25 cents on the dollar. So we basically look at the Economist cost of living
yeah.
index, whatever
yep.
it is, we just cut it by that and give them that deal.
Yep. That makes sense. Perfect. That's what I was curious to learn about. And you would have to because people in these countries don't make, you know, they make 20 cents on the dollar, right? So like there's no way they can afford it. Well, this has been super awesome having you on the show. Love talking about your startup hustle or startup hustle. Oh my God. Side hustle.
Yeah.
On Startup Hustle has been great. And congrats on building such a great business and taking the leap from Salesforce and this has been a super cool story. Again, this was Alan Stein. You can check him out at KadimaCareers.com. Follow you on LinkedIn. Once again, this episode was brought to you by Fullscale. You can check us out at Fullscale.io as well if you need to hire software developers.
And can I just give a plug for our podcast as well?
Absolutely. Yes. Tell us yeah. about your podcast.
So we have the Sick Career Podcast, SYCK. We're changing the name because people say it's not the best name, but it stands for Steer Your Career. The Steer Your Career Podcast, Steer Your Career with Kadima Podcast. But we talk to ambitious professionals, senior leaders, people that are trying to accelerate their careers. And Matt, I am going to have you on, so I will send you
okay.
a link. We can have a podcast crossover here.
All right.
Would love to have you on there and learn more about your career and your career journey.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, Alan, you can check him out at Kadima Careers. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
Take care.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.